Nutty Bites, because nerd girls are hot.
Take my love, take my land, take me where I cannot stand. I don't care, I'm still free, you can't take the sky from me.
What's awesome in the month of June?
Hello, nutcases and mixed nuts. Yeah, it's mostly everybody wants to be called nutcases, but the mixed nuts are pretty strong second, so I haven't quite decided. Let me know what you want, and maybe I will put up another poll for a tiebreaker. I did hear, by the way, that niblets was a fun idea, but you know what? Nobody told me that before I set up a poll, so niblets is out of the question. Sorry. Maybe children of Nutty Bites fans could be called niblets. Anyway, I'm talking about what's awesome in the month of June. Not too much awesome. Well, there is, but the beginning of June was not so awesome for me because I was in Newark, New Jersey working. It was a great working experience. It was just a little trying, and it's a trying time because I'm packing up to move to another province. So it's before I go on any further. We've got two more iTunes reviews. I gotta say, Canadian iTunes Store, you're slacking. And the American iTunes, the US iTunes Store, oh, it's winning. Cool Beans, 5 stars by the Baron of Hell. I have no idea who you are, by the way. Yeah, so this is fun. Normally, I don't like one-person shows. The one-person show tends to miss that special back and forth you get with multiple people. However, I really dig this show. Oddly enough, I heard about it from Sci-Fi Dig, which is another one-person show that is great. Well, anyway, this lady likes to talk about mostly geeky stuff that I like. She also did a sci-fi audio drama on one episode, which was great. Thank you. I just wish the show came out more often, but she's on other podcasts. She's the host of Digger Chats on Sci-Fi Dig podcast, which are all kinds of goodness. But back to this podcast. The single best thing that shines out above all the others is the passion, nachos. As for her love, rarely do you find such fire in a show. You can tell she's doing something she loves. Sorry for the horrible grammar. Well, Baron of Hell, that's awesome. I think it's great that you are a digger because Sci-Fi Dig is one of the first podcasts that I ever listened to, and I've been a pretty regular member of the community since it started way back when there were two hosts. Yeah, thank you so much. That's a great review, and I have to say I feel particularly blessed because, of course, I had to go all creepy and check out what other reviews you've left for other podcasts, and you don't only give out 5-star reviews, so I felt a little special. Thank you so much. Getting Your Geek On, 5 stars, by Doug Rabson, a.k.a. Geek Acres. A great fusion of all the things geeks love. The conversation of Twitter, fantastical fiction, awesome entertainment, on the big and small screen. It's all here. Nuke Chess brings an infectious joy to any topic she shares with her assorted nuts. We could tell what Doug voted for. From time to time, we're also treated to debates, from ineffectual sci-fi characters to a stroll through the best of the Batverse. If I have any complaint, it's that we don't get episodes nearly as often enough. For the most part, content pops up in the feed once a month. But that's a good thing, right? Leave us wanting more. If you can keep yourself from the withdrawal fits, you owe it to yourself to check out the Nutty Bites podcast. Doug, that's awesome. Thank you so much. That's a great review. Both of those reviews are very good and very flattering. I love that my biggest complaint is that there's not enough podcasts because, that is a good thing. I do want to leave you wanting more. This month, you actually are going to be getting quite a few podcasts. You've already received the post-Balticon wrap-up, me driving in a car with Tech and the Encaffeinated One, and I hope you enjoyed that. I have to say that the recording came out fantastic. Mark's H4 recorder, wow, I'm so impressed. If anybody wants, you've got a couple extra $100 laying around, and you want to contribute to this podcast and you'd like more content, just, you know what? gift me an H. I'll even go for an H2. I don't need the H4. H2, H4. You want to send me one of those microphones? I'll start recording things in the car. I'll start getting some extra content out to you. But at this moment, I just don't have the funds to buy something like that. But I want it so badly. And the only reason why that took so long to get into the feed is because Mark the Incavenated One was moving. So as soon as I dropped him off at his house after the drive, he packed everything up. The very next day he moved, and then it took him a while to actually unpack the recorder and get the file to me. And then I had to go through it and make sure that there wasn't any curse words or anything. And I think I did have to bleep one thing in there, at least one word. I would love to have an H2 or an H4 recorder and just create more content for everyone. But unfortunately, the snowball that I use has to be plugged into the computer, and it does make it a little cumbersome to record on the go. I was trying to use my cell phone to record on the go. I went to an open mic night. Here in Nova Scotia, there's a open mic event, which is called the Open Mic, M-I-K-E, Open Mic and Donna event. And it's hosted by a guy named Mike and a woman named Donna. Crazy, right? Anyway, so I tried to record some of that on my cell phone, and I was going to put that on the podcast. And unfortunately, I can't convert it. It's this weird sound file that is a Qualcomm standard only, and all of the conversion tools are outdated, and I don't have all of my computers are too upgraded to actually convert it. So it's a little frustrating. And I can't email it to myself because I used my American cell phone, which has data turned off. I can text message while I'm up here, but I can't actually email videos or pictures or anything like that. And so it's just kind of stuck on the phone, and I don't know what to do with it. If anybody can figure out how to do QCP, sure. But yeah, I need to come up with a mobile recording device or something. I had a Griffin iTalk that went into my old iPod, and that worked, and it came out okay. It's not great, but if there's any background noise at all, you can't hear the person speaking. That's actually the first mic that I used to podcast with on Sci-Fi Dig. I think I used it for my Fantastic Four review and stuff like that. And then I would edit it. It's okay. It's just, it's so subpar. And I feel you guys deserve a little bit better. As it is sometimes with the Skype debates, we get noise distortion, and I know this isn't an audiophile podcast, but this is just me rambling about equipment. I was recently a reader for Strangely Literal. It's funny I say recently. It was recently released. It's a very interesting How I Met Your Mother and Dr. Horrible crossover fan fiction that I read. I didn't write it. I just read it. I recorded that, I think, like 2 years ago. That's how far back I had recorded it. I recorded it on my old microphone before I got the snowball. And listening to it, I cringe. I thought my headset was really good. And, you know, I invested quite a bit. I spent, you know, like a good $75 on a headset for voice clarity. And it's amazing the difference between the headset and the snowball. So yeah, so I can't go back to the subpar equipment. So my next step is figuring out a way to record mobile. But I don't know, unless somehow somebody decides to, you know, the H2 fairy gives me a mobile recording unit or something. I don't know as of yet. Enough audiophile speak. You got the Balticon post wrap up, and you're getting this episode, which is, again, being released technically in July for June, but we're a little fuzzy on deadlines. I can't remember. I think it was Douglas Adams had Arthur Dent say, "I love deadlines. Deadlines are fun. They're fun as they fly right by," or something to that effect. I know I'm way off. Anyway, there's this episode. There's going to be a nutty debate at the end of this episode. The nutty debate is long, So rather than have an uber-long Nutty Bites episode that wouldn't be able to fit onto a CD, for at least one of my listeners that I know puts my episodes on CD and listens to them in the car, I'm going to break it up, and you're going to get the first half in this episode, and the second half will be released in a day or so. I'm just going to kind of break it up so that you have a little while for that. So yeah, that's going to be 3 episodes in the span of a week. So that should be fun. One of the not awesome things that happened was I lost my voice at Balticon, and I just started to get it back at the end of the week after Balticon. And then I went to Newark, and every day I went in and I worked in a school and I was speaking over elementary school students, and I would come back to the hotel and my voice would be hoarse and I couldn't record. Because I have things to record. I am the voice of Ginny Dare, the Scott Roche novel Ginny Dare. Yeah, I think I might have mentioned it in the past. I don't remember if I mentioned a secret project. Yeah, that was it. I'm going to be recording Ginny Dare for Scott Roche. I'm really excited. It's really good and I'm having fun doing it. But I couldn't record because I had already started recording and my voice sounded normal. And then I get in front of the microphone and I sound like Dr. Horrible, and that didn't work. So I was constantly battling that. And every day I would go into school and my voice would be fine. And I'd think, I can record tonight. And then I would get back to the hotel and my voice would be horrible. If you've listened to the Beyond the Wall podcasts, you've heard my voice. As it is, I'm not sure if my voice is 100%. But today is the first day that it's felt 100% since then, because when I got back from my Newark trip, I was even worse. I was squeaking. I was kind of pathetic. I actually spent a day or two in bed simply because I didn't feel well, and a lot of that had to do with the voice, and there's all sorts of ickiness that you don't want to know about. But I spent the last month with not my own voice, and today is the first day that my throat doesn't hurt in a month, and it's the first time that I think I actually sound like myself. I still hear myself as hoarse, but I think I'm coming across clear enough, so I think this will work. June 24th or 23rd or whatever is Joss Whedon's birthday. For the past 6 years, there has been something called Can't Stop the Serenity, or Serenity Now, Equality Now, where browncoats get together in theaters and venues and they watch Serenity and they raise money for the Joss Whedon's favorite charity, Equality Now. I went to the Halifax screening last year. It was a lot of fun. It was thrown by the people who are throwing HalCon. I guess this year it's a different set of people. Anyway, I'm not going to be here when they do their Can't Stop the Serenity event because Halifax does it in August. And I realized, ah, this stinks. You know, I'm not going to be able to go. Last year was the first year I was finally able to go. I mean, I had been wanting to go to this for so long, but every year it would happen when I was out of town, you know, and I never got the chance to go. Spur of the moment decision, I decided, you know what? I'm going to show it in my own house and I will collect money on my own. And so I invited some friends over. I made some Serenity-themed food. I made sushi with cooked chicken sushi. The sushi was really awesome. Chocolate-covered strawberries, because everybody knows Kaylee loves strawberries. I had cheese fondue, because there's some kind of hot cheese over there. And we watched Serenity. We also did some crafting, which was a lot of fun. My friend Liz came over. She needed help with a costume. We dutied her up. I sewed a hula hoop into the skirt of this dress that she had, and if it were pink, it could have been Kaylee's dress. It was awesome. And we had a lot of fun. We watched the movie. Then that night, I submitted the donation to Equality Now. I've been invited to share my story on the forums. I still have to make a handle and do that. I'm not a forum person. As everyone knows, I have a forum for Nutty Bites, but I'm not a forum person. So I have to get myself around to doing that. There's a few things. Excuse me. I have a guest blog post that I've been working on for the past 3 weeks because I'm 2/3 of the way done and I just can't get past it. So yeah, I also entered, well, not entered, but for my writing group, we had a theme of goodbyes this month, and I wrote an interesting story, and I'm going to revise it a bit, and it will be showing up as a future nutty fiction, so you can look forward to that. So, yeah, June was awesome. I say awesome a lot. 2011 is the year of awesome. This is true. But how many times can you hear me say awesome? You're ready to shoot yourself in the skull, right? Astonishing, awe-inspiring, beautiful, breathtaking, daunting, exalted. Okay. Fantastic, imposing, impressive, magnificent, majestic, mind-blowing, overwhelming, shocking, striking, stunning, stupefying, wonderful, wondrous, brilliant. These are all words that I could be saying instead of awesome. So I'm going to try to work on my vocabulary and use some more synonyms. I hope I haven't awesomed you to death already. Nutty Bites is now listed on canadapodcast.ca. And it's going to be announced on the Canada Podcast Buffet. So, woohoo! Yes, even more Canadian. Like we said in the wrap-up show, there will be 30% Canadian content here. Sure. While I was recording this, I got an email with a download for some feedback for the Google Voice line. And I think it's about the Balticon post-wrap-up. So let's listen.
Hey, hey, Nuke Chuss and friends, it's Doug, a.k.a. Geek Acres, and how's this for a meta moment? I'm listening to your podcast recorded in the car, in a car, something like that. At any rate, yes, Balticon was awesome this year, as it always is.
Yes.
And if your listeners have not yet made it to Balticon, well, there's plenty of time to start making plans.
That's right.
So we'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Doug. That's awesome. Yes, and you listened to it in a car while I was recording the next Nutty Bites, and so you recorded your feedback in a car that is going on the next show right away. Don't you feel the love, man? Can you tell me and Doug get along? Yeah.
Frank is a bounty hunter who's probably bitten off a lot more than he can chew in his latest assignment. He's up against a pair of hitmen. One is alive but dead, and the other is dead but should be alive. Throw in an escort girl and the big man, the devil, and you've got an interesting story.
Frank, I'm coming for you.
Boiling Point is volume 1 in the Tales of Frank. Available at neilcolhoun.com. That's neilcolhoun.com.
What? I'm watching.
So, Game of Thrones is over, which was awesome. Go listen to Beyond the Wall podcast. It's, I'll tell you how fantastic it is. Not awesome. Fantastic and brilliant and wonderful Game of Thrones is, because it was great. And most of the other shows that I normally watch are over. So, and I've been packing. So I've been rewatching old Buffy along with the potential cast. I've just finally finished Spartacus Blood and Sand. I haven't watched it in a while. And as I was packing, I was watching it. And I have to say, again, it was really interesting because it was really different, but I don't know. Sometimes I would laugh at the blood and the gore because it was kind of hysterical. After a while, I actually think that it went on too long. I think it would have been better had it been 8 or 10 episodes. I don't know. It was really good acting, a lot of really good story, and the political intrigue was really interesting. I don't know. I wasn't as excited about it watching it now as I was when I first watched it. And that could just be the fact that it's competing with some other epic things. And I use the word epic because that's how most people have been describing Game of Thrones, because it's stunning. It's out there. And it's such a high quality, it's kind of hard to compare to. And I know that these two shows are completely different, but they are, and each of them are epic tales, you know, in the traditional definition sense of the word. So perhaps that's why I wasn't so into it. I finally watched the last two seasons of The United States of Tara. Can you tell I've been taking advantage of my on-demand while I still have HBO? It's going to be canceled very soon. Yes, so I watched the last two episodes. And I know that these aren't on HBO, by the way. They're on some other channel. But the way that it is for my cable company and the way that it is in Canada is you get HBO Canada and you get the Movie Network and all of these bundle things. So I may be getting Showtime stuff on my HBO package, but I may not be getting all of the Showtime or all of the Stars, and I don't get the Stars channel. It's weird. Anyway, United States of Tara, really interesting. Really enjoyed that. I don't know if the show is over after season four. It kind of felt like it was. It was very interesting, and I kind of feel like, yes, it was glorified for television and it was a little drawn out, but I feel like they really got into some of the workings on how DID does actually work. Although anyone will tell you it's very rare for people to have actually split personalities. It's more along the lines of when Tara is looking and she sees her alters. That's more what it's been explained to me by people who have DID, what the experience is really like. It's not like they take over. It's just that they're in there. But it was really good. Great acting. I would love to see, you know, the actors. I mean, obviously Toni Collette and something Corbin, the guy from Northern Exposure. Obviously, they've got fantastic careers and they're going places. And I love seeing Patton Oswalt playing a serious role. I think that's fantastic. But I would love to see the kids go on and do more things. I think that their acting was really good, and it'd be interesting to see what they do. You don't often get people that can act well and are interesting to watch when they're young, because there's that whole child actor thing where they're speaking to the back of the row and they're doing facial expressions because it's cute. And I know that these characters are older than that, but when it comes to a child actor, it's really hard to phase out from the Shirley Temple cutesy to serious actress. And it's funny that I use Shirley Temple because she actually was a pretty good actress as an adult as well. I watched season 3 and 4 of Secret Diaries of a Call Girl. I had seen the pilot once. I never got to watch season 1 and season 2. And it's a really funny show. There's some really interesting things in there. I'm also noticing that each of these, what I'm watching, none of these are PG, just so you know. None of these are okay to watch around kids. There's blood, gore, and sex in Spartacus. There's lots of foul language and a little bit of violence in United States of Tara. And Secret Diaries of a Call Girl. Oh, yeah, there's lots of sex because, you know, she's a call girl. But it's really funny, and I enjoy the pacing. I think that this would actually have been better as a movie. I would have enjoyed it more. By the end of it, I really started hating the main character, and I wanted to kick her in her big teeth. And I think Billie Piper's beautiful, by the way. This is not to like say I don't like her because of her teeth. I just, that's what popped up in my head. She presents herself as, yes, I'm a call girl. Yes, I'm a prostitute, but I'm more than that. And by the end of the show, you're just like, no, you're really not. And everything you like about the character, well, it doesn't matter because all of the flaws and the way that she treats the people around her are so glaringly obvious. You can't. And I feel for her boyfriend or whatever in the show. I don't want to spoil anything, but there's one particular character that's very important to her. She stomps on his heart.
The Flash Pulp Podcast. 3 to 10 minutes of fiction brought to you thrice weekly. Now it's three apocalypses in one.
Yeah! Suffering from tough, stuck-on humans? Well, 20 hellish hours of suffocation in the all-encompassing web of Carwick the Spider God will get them right out. Too many brains lying around? The ravenous mouths surrounding zombie-fighting Ruby will quickly clean those up. Nosy neighbors? Infect them with the murder plague, and watch as they dissolve into paranoid maniacs bent on the preemptive assassination of their friends and family. Why stop at one end of the world when you can have all three? You can find them all at flashpulp.com or search for them on iTunes.
Art happenings?
Not too much to speak about when it comes to art, simply because I've been so busy and not able to draw too much. But I did draw another Puffy character. I drew a Puffy Art Blanchard from the Fetidus podcast. It's a patio book that will be turned into a print novel, and it's amazing, and I've said many times before how much I love this podcast and I love this story, and I just love the way that James Jerram does his sound, and it's music, it's full cast recording, so it's kind of audio drama, it's everything. Anyway, Art Blanchard, he's the main character, he's very surly, he's the one who's got a very raspy voice, and I thought it was hysterical to draw him as one of my Puffy characters. I have not released that on the internet as of yet. I will be releasing it when I release this podcast. So it will be on Flickr, but it won't be released any longer than it takes to actually, you know, upload the file and post it to the feed. So podcast listeners, my nutcases, you will be getting to see this first. That's pretty cool. I was trying to see if I could print up a couple of things with my Kermit Gravera creation, and unfortunately, I ran into a lot of problems with that. While I could use parody as my defense as to why I use a copyrighted character in trying to produce things, Zazzle does not agree. And they're not willing to have their lawyers fight it. I totally respect that, and I totally understand that. So the idea of being able to offer that up to people who wanted it is not going to happen. Although I did find an alternative, but it's not really something I can set up to let people buy, and people don't seem to like the idea of giving me the money and having me get it produced. But, you know, that's the way of things, unfortunately. There is one lucky listener out there that is going to be getting a t-shirt, though. That's one of the reasons that I was looking into this and trying to pursue it. Was simply I wanted to send somebody a cheer-up gift, and it cost me a couple of days of hassle spread over a couple of weeks to figure out how to actually get it done. So eventually, this lucky listener will be getting a shirt. If you didn't get a t-shirt, I'm sorry. I would love to give everyone t-shirts, but I'm just not able. You know what? If the H2 fairy or H4 fairy comes in the mail and I get an H4 microphone, I can promise that I will get t-shirts printed up, and I probably won't be able to afford to ship them, but I will figure out a certain t-shirt thing, and I will give t-shirts out to people when I see them. And of course, anyone who decides to bestow wonderful gifts on me, you will get thank you gifts in return, whether it be art prints or t-shirts or something like that. But, you know, I'm not trying to bribe you. I'm just saying what goes around comes around. And if somebody wants to, you know, give me something that costs quite a bit, well, then I'll end up giving something to all of my listeners. So there's that. I'm still looking into trying to figure a way to create a licensing site so that people could download artwork of mine and then create things as they want so that they don't have to deal with shipping costs and converting it from different countries and all sorts of nonsense. And unfortunately, you know, part of that's going to have to be on the honor system, but I'm looking into something like that. And if this is confusing enough, yes, it's confusing enough for me. This may be something where I talk about it and it takes me 6 months to actually figure it out. And by the time I figured it out, nobody cares anymore. Kind of like when people were asking to buy prints of my work, it took me 6 months to find somebody that I thought was worth the cost of actually purchasing, because I could print things up and send it to people, but that's not a print. You need a Gleasy art print. You need archival quality, gallery quality prints. I refuse to sell anything that's cheap. I don't want something that's going to fade, because if somebody's going to give me money for something, I want them to get a quality product. So by the time I figured it all out, nobody wanted it anymore. And I don't mean nobody. I've sold a few prints, but not too many. I really don't care. I'm so far in the red, it doesn't even count anymore. This is not a job. This is not, yes, art is a job. My graphics is a job. But when I'm doing fine art, I'm not expecting to be able to pay my rent with it. If I could one day, that would be amazing. But that's why it goes on the back burner, because it doesn't earn me rent. And it's just something I do because I have to keep myself sane. And if I could make money doing it, it would be great. But I don't think that I'm going to be able to make any serious coin on it. Much like people don't podcast because they expect to make money from their podcast. It's a tool to promote other things that may have helped you make money. For instance, people like Scott Sigler, his podcast is part of his brand. He makes money off of writing, not off of podcasting, but the podcasting is the advertising for what he makes money off of, you know, and so it's like that, you know, we do things because we're passionate about them and it's not about the money. And if it's ever about the money, that's when you should stop. If you are doing something creative because you want to make money solely, that's the only reason you're doing it, stop doing it. You're never going to make any money and you need to move on something else, because if you're going to be creative, you need to be passionate. Without passion, you don't have it and you're going to fail. And once you do something you love, will you definitely succeed? No, but you have more of a chance, because if you're passionate about something, other people will have a reason to be vested in it. If it's just something to make money, it's not going to be genuine and nobody's going to care. Mini rant on the creative process by someone who has found a way to make money using my skills, but not my passion.
Look, at The Weird Show, we don't have the answers.
Heck no!
But we sure do love those questions. The Weird Show is a weekly roundup of strange news, odd views, and bizarre ideas, rearranged and packed together with open-mindedness, inquisitiveness, and just a touch of humor, all packed into a one-hour audio podcast that comes out just about every Saturday morning. Get it at theweirdshow.com.
And break out of your normal reality, at least for a little while.
Nutty Debate.
Hello, Mixed Nuts and Nutcases. So far, those are the top two votes for what fans of Nutty Bites are. Tonight, we're going to be discussing Harry Potter. And with me, I have Kaylin.
Hey.
And MA in PA.
Hi, everybody.
And I think I want to start this out where if you guys could just give me some background on your Harry Potter experience.
Back when the books first came out, I read them basically as they were released, loved them, seen the movies, and am currently educating my children in them. I think it's the best choice. We're on book 5. My kids are 6 and almost 8, and they run around casting spells and curses at me in the middle of the grocery store.
Oh, that's awesome.
When they're not killing kobolds?
Yeah, basically. They've moved on from killing kobolds to now they they can throw out an unforgivable curse with the best of them. So.
Oh, okay.
Nice. And MA.
Let's see. I was at work one day and my coworker told me about this book about a boy wizard. And so I went and I picked it up and it was called Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone, though the one that I picked up was the Philosopher's Stone. I actually got the English version. And I tore through that and the second book and the third book. And then I was waiting on the porch for the fourth book when it came out. For when Amazon delivered it. Nice. And ever since then, I have, well, for a while there, for a couple of years there, I was pretty heavily involved in the Harry Potter fandom, especially in the role-playing games that were involved, that they had over on LiveJournal. So essentially, I had a character that we lived in real time for 2 years in the Harry Potter universe. So we needed to be up on our canon. And then since then, I get the books day and date. I read the books day and date. And I've seen all the movies. And I am going to be seeing the final movie, oh, boo-hoo, a couple days early because my husband is getting us into a preview screening.
Hate you still.
Yes.
Now, does your son, the Quicksilver kid, does he read Harry Potter also?
It took him a little while, but there was one summer where he started the first book and he read all 7 books through the whole summer.
Wow.
Yeah. I had a trouble getting him started. He really wasn't into it at first. He had seen the movies and they were okay, but then he read them and he tore through them in a summer and he hasn't wanted to read them again, but he goes and sees the movies with great enthusiasm. So, but I'm also a Harry Potter knitter. I have about a half a dozen scarves in my closet and I made Hermione's hat.
You could send me a yellow and black one if you ever wanted to get rid of one. Just saying.
Well, see, I'm Hufflepuff. I'm already, you know, I'm sorted. It's a yay, let's go, Badgers.
That's awesome. All right. And for my listeners, I have been reading Harry Potter since just before Prisoner of Azkaban came out. One of my sisters was reading it and she said, "You have to read this book." And I said, "Really? You want me to read about kids going to wizardry school? What is this, Mildred Hubble? I don't think so." And we were going on a vacation somewhere. And so I think we were going to visit Kaylin. And she started reading to me in the car from the first book. And by the time we got there, I started reading them myself. And once Prisoner of Azkaban came out, I tore through that as well. And I've been reading them since they were released. And of course, going to see the movies and so forth.
Yes. So.
I've also wanted to just mention our local library. Their summer reading program is Harry Potter themed. And if the kids read 2,000 pages, they're actually bringing the Hogwarts Express into our local train station. And they're going to get a ride on the Hogwarts Express and take them to a pizza party. Yeah. Oh,
so cool.
When is that?
End of the summer, end of August. You have to read 2,000 pages, though. But
I've read 2,000 pages. I've read the whole series.
2,000 pages, that's nothing. I can do that.
Read over this summer. You can't count pages you've already read.
Well, I'm going to be reading 1,000 pages with George R. R. Martin's book, so.
Exactly. Oh, and who else wants to go down to Florida to go to their new Harry Potter world down there?
I've been.
You've been? Oh, I hate you.
Yeah, it was great. Universal Studios has a Harry Potter section of the theme park, and it's awesome. The main ride is really cool because it's one of these. At Universal, there's rides, but they do a lot of audio and video experience, so it sometimes makes you feel like you're actually moving a lot more than you are.
Oh, but, okay. That's cool.
The line goes all the way through Hogwarts and there's little things to see through there, which is a lot of fun. And then you go on the ride and you're sitting in, it's like a deacon's bench. And you fly all around and you follow Harry and Hermione and Ron, and they're on, they're in their Quidditch robes and they're on brooms, and you fly all over the place. And the Whomping Willow tries to attack you and it's so much fun. And they've recreated Hogsmeade. And
oh, cool.
It's really funny because you're in Florida and it's really hot and there's fake snow everywhere.
Do they have butterbeer?
They do have butterbeer.
What did it taste like?
I did not drink it. I didn't drink it because...
You have failed us.
I have a recipe for it.
I'm going to have to get that.
It's very easy, but amazing. It's very good.
Before my husband and I went, our brother's family went, and the Harry Potter queen, his daughter, she told me all about the butterbeer, and she said it was really sweet and it tastes like butterscotch.
Ah, okay.
So, I did get pumpkin juice, though. It was too sweet.
Was it too sweet? Oh, that's a shame.
It just tasted like sugar.
Oh, okay.
So, but they even had they had Yonko's Joke Shop, which I know is not in Hogsmeade, but it was cool to go to. They had
it's
all the
branch.
Candy stores. Yeah,
it's a branch.
Yeah, they're franchised. So
yeah.
So the Harry Potter experience is a lot of fun and totally worth it. And I acted like a big kid. So. We're going to start our debate with which teacher from any time period in the books do you think you would have liked to have be your teacher?
I didn't see this as really a question. It's Dumbledore.
Really? Okay.
Oh, absolutely.
Why Dumbledore?
Several reasons. One, the most accomplished wizard ever. Two, the most fun wizard ever. He would teach you real stuff. And he would make it interesting. And you never knew what you would get in the class that day.
Yeah, that's true. Then again, he was Voldemort's teacher.
Yes.
This is very true.
Mm-hmm. M.A.?
Well, she does have a very good point, and I can understand that. However, I'm partial to Professor McGonagall. I think she is awesome, and I love the idea of transfiguration. But my favorite teacher is Remus Lupin.
No. I love him, yeah.
Yes, he's awesome. The best. I mean, just the private Patronus lessons that he gave Harry were just amazing, both in the book and in the movie. You know, and he's a teacher that gives chocolate. You know it makes it better.
You know, there is that. There's something to be said for that.
Dumbledore
my only issue
candy.
My only issue with Lupin is that every full moon you have to take a break from studies and you have to put up with a substitute like Snape.
Racist.
See, I don't think that's a problem. You know, you get a break every month and you just ignore what the other person says because who's really going to listen to what Snape has to say?
I'm going to steal a quote from Willow from Buffy, you know, okay. About once a month. I'm not so nice to be around either. So that's okay.
True. It's just a form of furry PMS.
Mm-hmm.
Furry PMS. Interesting.
So my choice has always been the teacher in the books that most reflects the most influential teacher in my experience. When I was in high school, I had a teacher. She was very tough. She didn't treat us like students. She acted as if she was our boss. And she had such high expectations of us that most people thought she was the B word and didn't like her. She actually was my very favorite professor, and her letter of recommendation for me, basically I wouldn't have needed any of the other letters of recommendation to get into my art program, which was amazing. And she's the one that got me to pursue art as my profession. So the teacher who is most like that is Professor McGonagall.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think your first reaction to her is she's very stern, she's very strict.
Mm-hmm.
But I think she just expects so much out of her students that she makes them deliver. And then deliver they do because this debate, by the way, will have lots and lots of spoilers. So unless you've read all 7 books, don't listen. At the end, in the final battle, she was leading all of her students against Voldemort and the Death Eaters.
And she kicked ass at the end of book 6, too.
Oh, yeah.
Well, she also never shies away from anyone. No. She was always a strong character through all the books.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
She never had issues standing up to anybody, whether it be Snape in the very beginning or Umbridge when she was trying to take over the school.
That's so awesome.
That kind of stuff. So, I mean, she really is a great quality teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And she doesn't seem to show favoritism either. Whereas Lupin has his favorites.
This is true.
She, not so much favoritism, she's fair to a fault.
Mm-hmm.
She's a little harder on the Gryffindors than any other house.
Yes, because she doesn't want to show favoritism.
She kind of goes a little more in the opposite direction, so. But.
I think that Dumbledore would be a great teacher, but I also think that it's funny, I'm actually taking all of these teachers and I'm placing them with teachers that I have had. Dumbledore is much like my advisor in college, where basically you can get all the enlightenment and the guidance that you need, but you're the one that has to put in the work. You mm-hmm. know, he's not going to follow you around. Although I give Dumbledore a lot of credit because he does care about every student. He was very concerned about Draco Malfoy when in book 6, when Draco wasn't looking so good. And he was so concerned that Draco would have to kill him that he asked Snape to kill him for Draco. So I give him a lot of credit for that.
Mm-hmm.
I think I like Lupin more as a friend than a teacher. But that's,
this is true.
You know, because I don't think that any of the Slytherins really got anything from Lupin. I actually think that the Gryffindors probably got more from Snape than the Slytherins got from Lupin, if that makes sense.
I'd have to read those scenes again to see, because I have a bit of a Slytherin bent, because I played a Slytherin for 2 years. So I played a Slytherin that was good and not aligned with
I think
Voldemort,
I disagree with you on that, though.
Yeah?
Yeah, his lessons did not seem to be skewed in any way.
No, I don't think his lessons, I meant his attitude, you know, where he would take Harry aside and give Harry extra guidance, and he paid more attention to the Gryffindors, but he just kind of ignored all Slytherins, whereas Snape, while he's very negative towards a lot of the Gryffindors, he is able to give them a little more attention, and he obviously doesn't try to stop Hermione from learning. There's a bit of respect there, even if she is a know-it-all in his mm-hmm. eyes.
Well, I would say that Lupin, even though he may give more personal attention to Gryffindors, I don't think he ever held back from any of the Slytherins.
And I don't think we saw all that much in class. Do you know what I mean? I don't think we saw that much. So we don't really know. And I can't remember if third year, if all the houses were in the Defense Against the Dark Arts or if it was just Slytherin and Gryffindor in there. I can't remember if there were any Hufflepuffs or Ravenclaws in there.
And do you also tell me that, like, say, for example, completely intimidating and scaring Neville beyond anything else on a daily basis was really providing Neville with a quality education?
I agree. That was horrible. And he should be beaten up for being mean to Neville.
Yes.
Because, you know, teachers aren't supposed to be bullies.
Right. He bullied a lot. He bullied and he intimidated, and I mean, he outright.
He shouldn't have been a teacher.
I don't think he. I think most of the reason why he was at Hogwarts is because Dumbledore was the only one that gave him a chance after Voldemort fell the first time. And maybe he's not up for, you know, maybe he doesn't quite have the disposition to deal with certain students, but I think those people still got an education. And you have to admit he was brilliant at potions.
Yes, I will admit that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that he had a lot of knowledge and he did share it. And mm-hmm. he did produce students with very great skill. So it's mm-hmm. not like he was an ineffective teacher.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Just he had his favorites too.
I'm curious, do we ever find out if he was one of Slughorn's collected?
I don't think so, and I wouldn't think that he was, because it really seemed to me from the scenes that we saw in Order of the Phoenix, he was pretty marginalized.
Mm.
And I think that's part of the reason why the Death Eaters were so attractive to him. It might have been that if he hadn't been marginalized and if he had been brought up by being collected by Slughorn, because I think Slughorn's an example of how not all Slytherins are evil.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean?
No, I agree. It just occurred to me because we were talking about how great he was at potions, and that's Slughorn's thing. So it was like, and you know, his book was Half-Blood Prince. So you know he was in Slughorn's class, so why wasn't he collected?
This is
I think
true.
He wasn't collected because even though he was skilled,
he wasn't still
a prominent figure.
Yes, and I think Slughorn didn't just collect good students. He collected some people that could do stuff for him when they got out of school. So it doesn't matter. You could be the most you could be brilliant at potions, but if you're not going to do anything for Slughorn after school's over, he's not going to bother collecting you. Why should he bother?
And Snape did not have the connections to make it worthwhile.
No.
At that point, right? Yeah.
He's been a good student, but I wouldn't be surprised if Slughorn didn't think he was going to go far at all.
Very interesting. And as we're discussing this, it just gives another thought occurs to me. Do you think that his personality, his social skills are much akin to Neville's when he was in high school? So maybe is that why he bullies Neville so much?
That is a very good question. You make it wonder, since he knew, he would know, you know, pretty much firsthand what happened to Neville's parents. Maybe he's trying in his own twisted Slytherin way to toughen Neville up. You know what I mean? By bullying him. And that's, you know, if you think about it, that's sort of the way of the to do, you know, that's one way they could do it is toughen him up. You know, yeah, he got a bum deal, but he's got to make something of himself. And that's one way of, you know, tempering him.
No, I think that Snape just enjoyed lifting himself up by stepping on other people.
Yeah, see, I was thinking it was more along the lines of he saw Neville and it reminded him about what he hated about himself.
So he bullied him in that regard. I can see that.
Yeah, because that's what a lot of bullies do.
Because he hated
enjoyment.
Well, because he finally got to pretend to be James.
Yeah.
Okay, so next question is, if you're a student at Hogwarts, who would you like to be your friend?
For me, it really depended on the situation. I mean, in that environment and day and age of the wizarding world, I would want somebody that I could count on in a sticky situation, et cetera, and that would be Hermione. But in real life, who would I want as my friend would be the most fun people in school, which are the Weasley twins.
Everybody wants to be friends with the Weasleys.
Well, I think the Weasleys could fit for both criteria because they're definitely skilled in the ways of magic. And if you were in a fight, they'd have your back and you could feel secure.
Yeah, absolutely.
I could totally see, I can picture Kaylin being in Hogwarts with the Weasleys and you guys are like playing, not D&D because that's too much like Hogwarts, but you'd be like role playing, I don't know, Shadowrun or something. Something completely bizarre.
Are you kidding me? We'd be playing Killer on Broomsticks.
There you go. Killer on Broomsticks. Exactly. Okay, M.A.?
Well, since I always identified with the Hufflepuffs, I've been always curious as to the Hufflepuff crew that we see, Justin Finch-Fletchley, Susan, and Hannah, and those crew. I feel that those would be the people that I would probably hang out with. Not in the front, you know, they're back in the, you know, side of the story, but I wouldn't be a person that would be out in the forefront anyway. Right. And, you know, Hufflepuffs are loyal, so they're going to have my back no matter what.
Now, Luna is a Ravenclaw, right?
Yes, correct. She is.
Am I the only person who thinks that she should be a Hufflepuff?
See, I don't think we'd see enough of her being as bookish, I guess. So maybe she would fit as a Hufflepuff, but because she's, I don't know. I think she's maybe a little bit too strange for Hufflepuff.
It's funny. My kids refer to the Hufflepuffs as the leftovers.
Aww. I've heard that too.
Because whenever they describe, like, the Slytherins have this clear identity and the Gryffindors have a clear identity and the Ravenclaws have a clear identity and then there's everyone else.
Well, there aren't many Ravenclaws that we see, if you think about it.
Well, there's one of the Patils.
And one of the Patils.
Yeah. But Cho Chang.
Oh, but that's right.
With Ravenclaw, I felt like, and Luna, I felt like she was put in there because even though she wasn't, the thing about Ravenclaw was intelligence, and even though she wasn't maybe bookish or swift, she had a different way of thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Not like any other, and I think that's kind of why that uniqueness was why of her thinking was why she was in Ravenclaw.
Yeah.
I think Luna would have had a better time of it had she been in Hufflepuff, because there is a personality trait that stands out amongst them, and that's, you know, loyalty and friendship. And yes. I can't imagine that Hufflepuffs would hide a fellow Hufflepuff's shoes.
This is very true.
I always, based on my own school-aged experience and my adult experience, I have a feeling I would probably end up being best buddies with Neville and Luna.
Yeah.
Although, you know, it's like, well, if you get to pick, I don't know. But you know what? Honestly, I don't think I'd want to pick outside of them, because again, you know, they have the qualities that I admire. I like people who are weird. I like people who are different. I mean, I'd be wearing a giant lion head just with next to Luna. I'd be asking Neville to show me his plants and all sorts of things. Yeah, I think I'd find myself most comfortable with them. If the school is attacked, I would probably not be noticed. So that would be a good thing.
Yes.
Nice.
I would be hiding in the room of requirement.
Next to Neville, because you know Bellatrix is coming for him.
Oh, no. No, Bellatrix is scary. I take him to the rumor requirement with me.
She's got a good job. She works hard for the money. She looks like a model, like a playboy bunny.
You can listen to part two of that debate in the feed in just a few days. The music you have heard tonight is The Ballad of Serenity by Joss Whedon and She Don't Like Firefly by Scooge. I had to say goodbye.